Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
And I will be sharing a bit of Circle Sanctuary history. I'd like to begin with a song. Music has been an important part of Circle Sanctuary since its earliest days. I helped birth Circle Sanctuary at Samhain time, 1974. The name Circle came to me, the logo of 12 circles around a circle, encircled, came to me. We continue to use that as our emblem, our logo for Circle, a.k.a. Circle Sanctuary. And the idea of having a pagan center, a legal pagan church, that would bring together people from many different nature spirituality traditions to share knowledge and information, ritual, celebration with each other, and to grow in understanding with the ancient ones, with the greater circle of nature of which we are all part. Early on in Circle's history, we started creating music, and one of the songs that I helped birth is something known as the Watcher's Chant. It has been around since the 1970s when I birthed it. It too came from a dream, and it has made its way into songbooks by a variety of magical practitioners. So the Watchers chant.
Earth and air and fire and water surround us with protective light. Earth and air and fire and water, guard us with your magic might. Come, watchers, come and balance our circle. Come, watchers, come and balance our group. Come, watchers, come and strengthen our aura. Come, watchers, come and strengthen our work. Earth and air and fire and water surround us with protective light. Earth and air and fire and water, guard us with your magic might. Come, watchers, come and balance our circle. Come, watchers, come and balance our group. Come, watchers, come and strengthen our aura. Come, watchers, come and strengthen our work. Earth and air and fire and water. Earth and air and fire and water. Earth and air and fire and water.
Watchers chant. We worked with that chant in the earliest days of Circle Sanctuary. I created it as part of personal ritual, but it also got used in small group and large group ritual, and we continue to use it today from time to time. So in this sacred circle with the watchers watching over us and guiding our work, we journey through time and space to the origins of Circle Sanctuary. I'll talk a bit about my own background and then some of the connections that came into being in the early 1970s that gave birth to Circle Sanctuary in 1974. I was born in Virginia in 1949, and as a young child, I felt a strong affinity to nature and the magic of nature. I've been a nature mystic throughout this incarnation. I was fascinated by mythic imagery, stories, and as I grew up and came to learn to read, one of my very first books, Little Witch by Anna Elizabeth Bennett, which was published in 1953. And in the mid-50s, when I learned to read, I really enjoyed this book. To me, the concept of witch, a wise one, knowing how to work in harmony with nature and to channel the powers within and around, is something that has been part of my lifetime experience. And as I continued growing up, I had a natural affinity to reading books about mythology, enjoying manifestations of mythic stories in various movies. In fact, one of my most favorite movies was The Three Lives of Thomasina, which was a movie that came out. It was a Disney movie. It came out in December of 1963, and it's actually based on a novel called Thomasina, The Cat Who Thought She Was God, which came out in 1957 by Paul Gallico. That is actually a depiction of a woman who loved animals and was a witch. It even had a cameo appearance of Bas the Cat Goddess in the film, who later became important in my own spiritual growth and development. As I continued to grow up in Northern Virginia, my pagan inclinations were woven in to the religion of my upbringing. I was raised fundamentalist Southern Baptist, but did not really see a conflict. I saw my personal magical expressions as something that worked in harmony with the religion of my family of origin. Indeed, some of my first group Halloween celebrations were in the home church that I was part of. I loved Halloween. I loved dressing up. And yes, indeed, I even dressed up as a witch as part of my growing up experiences with Halloween, which today I celebrate also as Samhain. As I got into junior high and high school, I started studying the classics. In ninth grade, I studied Latin and was enamored of it. I had my first experience with connecting with divination. I was at a Latin banquet as the Sibyl of Cumae and did kinds of readings as part of that early experience. And throughout my high school days, I continued to take Latin and to learn about ancient pagan culture through reading the language of the ancient pagan Romans, studying the mythology, learning about the culture, and was part of the Latin Honor Society and was deeply immersed. As I went to college at the College of William and Mary in Virginia, I majored in psychology but continued my love of classics. And it was in the spring of 1971 that I did my first public pagan ritual. I did it as an academic exercise to have people experience what it would be like to celebrate spring, to welcome in spring in an ancient Greco-Roman way, calling on Dionysus, calling on Mother Earth as Terra, that's the Roman version, and Gaia, the Greek version, dancing ecstatically, carrying a thyrsus, which is a phallic wand tipped with a pine cone from Dionysian mysteries, playing a tambourine, which I still have to this day. It was a fun educational experience, and in so doing, what was an academic exercise that I was doing in my role as president of Beta Sigma Phi, the Classics Honor Society, and as head and first president of the Classics Club, which I founded on campus, which continues on today. This was an educational, fun experience for people. That was its intention. But in working with the professors and weaving in some ancient sacred names and practices in calling the divine came, and I was not the same after that. Indeed, I felt a sense of the importance of working with nature in a sacred way, in ancient ways, but in contemporary times. And after graduating from the College of William and Mary, I found my way into a nearby area, Hampton Roads, Virginia. My first job was working on an archaeological dig. I was doing some lab work, and the woman that was in the lab with me happened to have the craft in her family, pagan survivals of folkways. We started doing full moons together. It was a women's circle. And while that only lasted the summer of 71, it, too, had a lasting impact on me. And as I went off to graduate school at Rutgers University, helping to break the gender barrier there and continue my studies of psychology, I found myself starting to connect with other people that had an interest in mysticism and magic. I realized as I went to graduate school the first time that the things I really wanted to study, the mind-body-spirit connection, seemed to be a stretch for the department I was in. It's now a field known as psychoneuroimmunology. Some people call it complementary medicine. It really looks at the holistic connections with humankind. And I left graduate school, went traveling, and ended up spending some time with some hill folk in the Appalachians in North Carolina and encountered magical practitioners. I continued my journeys, and that summer of 1972, I came to land in Madison, Wisconsin. And that fall, I started meeting a variety of people, and that continued on as I became part of the emerging magical and pagan scene in Madison, Wisconsin. I was part of a ceremonial magical order known as Spectrum. I was the high priestess of this group and worked with a number of people who had been practitioners of various Hermetic traditions, Christian mystical traditions, and other forms of esoteric practice. It was a result of that group and the weekly work that we did that my call to do service in the magical realm, the mystical realm, and the nature communion realm became very strong. And shortly before Samhain in 1974, the idea of founding an organization that would serve people connecting with the sacred ways of nature, magical and mystical ways, people from many different walks of life, ethnicities, backgrounds, and other diversities, to found a center that would bring people together for mutual support and to have a community. The name Circle came to me in a dream vision. The image of 12 circles around a central circle and those all being encircled by two circles came to me as well. And I knew that this was to be an important part of my life. I started working with others. A man by the name of Jim Allen, who had been part of Spectrum with me, and I started working on having events. And Yule in 1974, we had our first event. We were in the city of Madison, the south part of the city, in a place called Fontaine Circle. We were in a townhouse, and people who had been part of the Spectrum group were there, a man named Patrick and a man named Dennis, who was the brother of Jim Allen, whose birth name was Kevin. Spectrum House evolved into the first circle, Covenstead, and in 1975, we followed the dream of having a center in a more natural area. Here again, I had a dream about this next step in Circle Sanctuary's development. I was still calling the organization at that time Circle. The dream was very powerful. I had a sense that a place was there for us to rent, and we started looking for the place. En route to the place that we had found in the classified ad listings of a local paper, a fireball came from the sky and landed on the side of the road as we sped by. And I remember remarking to Jim, saying, "Ah, that's an omen." And indeed, a short while later, we arrived at an old farmhouse, which we later called Circle Farm Number 1, met with the landlord and landlady, and they decided to rent to us. they had had a number of people who were very interested in renting this property. It was a old farmhouse with some land around it, and there was a farm connected with it that was being rented by another party, and the farmer used the barn, we used the house, and there was a wonderful yard right next to the house that later became our ceremonial grounds. So we moved to Circle Sanctuary's first rural home that year, and we started creating a circle for our ceremonial practice. We outlined the circle with stones, and within it we had a pentagram. This wonderful circle space included the planting of herbs in some of the places around the points of the pentagram, and in the very center of that circle was where we held our ceremonies. In 1975, we began sponsoring public talks in nearby Madison, Wisconsin. We were near the rural community of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and would drive into Madison. We gave talks in a variety of locations. We were at the University of Wisconsin, which is right in the heart of Madison. We gave talks at the YMCA, which was a place where that served as a community center. We were getting good response from people. We established a library archives in our farmhouse. And then the following year, in 1976, we realized that it was important to do some public education. So one of the things that we started doing was writing about the craft and paganism, not only in terms of some of the periodicals that were being circulated around the U.S. at that time and other countries, because from the very get-go, we had been linking in with people not only from across the U.S., but from the U.K. and some other places. We also thought it would be important to do some public education through mainstream press, and an article about the Wiccan religion and contemporary paganism came out in the Capital Times newspaper in Madison, of course, in fall, in time for Samhain. And actually, that article was written by Jacqueline Machard before she became a well-known author. We decided to do some additional educational work, and paralleling our work today in which we are doing podcasting, we started having our own weekly radio show on broadcast radio. In the 1970s, there was an emphasis on providing alternatives to mainstream broadcasting, and I had one of the first shows on the emerging community listener-sponsored radio known as WORT. I love the name. I've been into herbal medicine and lore and gardening throughout my life, and to be on wart radio, wart being an old English word for herb, I thought was just fabulous. Wart was also known as back porch radio, and indeed its range of programming was quite diverse and innovative. So I started the Circle Magic Show. And it was 1/2 hour on Thursday nights. And Jim Allen did the engineering. I produced it and lined up guests. We not only had programs about different aspects of magic, witchcraft, and paganism, we explored new consciousness. We had people from different spiritual communities, Christian mystical communities, the Finhorn community, for example. We had people from the emerging Buddhist Center on our show. We had people involved in holistic health, talking about wellness. And we continued this show for several years. We looked at divination, parapsychology, and we combined our interviews with music. Jim Allen and I both had a love of music, and from the time that we started connecting in Spectrum, even before there was a circle, music was an important part of our magical practice. And then, as we continued to develop Circle, we thought it was important to share our music with others, and we started sponsoring and being part of presentations outside of Wisconsin. Jim and I were part of Gnosticon 6, a national convention sponsored by Carl Weschke, head of Llewellyn Publications in St. Paul, Minnesota. And we got to connect with Carl and other people with Llewellyn during that conference and met a variety of people. It was the last of the Gnosticons. We had been doing work for a number of years, but had not had much face-to-face contact with people beyond where we were practicing. This was a time before the internet, email, social media, and smartphones. So we were doing our networking face-to-face by postal mail, by newsletters that were sent through the mail. We also started networking with other groups, and we traveled to Iowa, and we connected with a Wiccan group there known as Coven of the Mirror, and started doing presentations and rituals there. In 1976, we also formed our very first coven that met regularly. And we brought together Wiccans and pagans from a variety of paths, including solitary practice witchcraft, as well as traditional Latvian pagan religion. Carlos Berzins, Nils Holge was his magical name, was somebody who had been in the United States since the aftermath of World War II. In his village in the first part of the 20th century, he took part in pagan survivals of folk traditions that were called Latvian traditions. In particular, summer solstice was an important time. It was known as St. John's Day, and it involved a procession through the village with candlelight and torches and the kindling of bonfires and the singing of songs and being up all night. And he told of his experiences growing up pagan in Latvia before World War I and World War II came into being. Once communists took over Latvia religious expression, including folk religion, was suppressed. We were the first people he had encountered in the United States who were practicing something parallel to what his native Latvian folk religion was about. And he was a well-accomplished artist. He did theater and was a wonderful part of our community. Another person who was part of our very first coven, Stephanie, continues to work with us to this day, being part of our board of directors as Circle Sanctuary transformed from coven into Wiccan and Pagan Church. In 1977, I had a dream vision about the importance of networking through music and making music more widely available by publishing a songbook. And Circle Magic Songs came into being. Circle Magic Songs had music created by Jim Allen. He created a lot of songs. I did more chants. He was very good at noting out musical scores. And we put together this homegrown published book. I did illustrations and did some of the articles. And we decided we'd let other people know about this. We had not only the musical scores and the words, but we invited people as part of this network to share their own music and to give us feedback about the music that we were doing. Well, word started spreading about us sharing music, and people were very interested in this. We started getting letters from all over the U.S. and in other countries. People interested in not only having our book sent to them, but they wanted to find out about people who were practitioners in their area. And thus, Circle Network was born. Circle Network, which continues to this day, began as our mailing list of people who wanted to connect with others. We created a publication, the Circle Network Bulletin. It was an occasional one-page periodical. And then that early newsletter started emerging into an actual regular publication, becoming Circle Network News, and later becoming Circle Magazine. And now in contemporary times, we're continuing to publish quarterly, and our magazine is transformed back into a newsletter, but with lots of information in a digital version and color pictures. So Circle Sanctuary News is the name of our present publication that we do networking with. We were really excited to be networking with others, and Circle Network has continued to be serving a worldwide pagan community. We have, in contemporary times now, the advantage to also do our networking through this podcasting and through events and through social media, as well as our website. So we have a cyber presence as well as an in-print presence, as well as a face-to-face presence. We continued to travel around in 1977, and presenting music and workshops. We were at the very first multi-tradition pagan summer campout festival known as the Pan Pagan Festival. And it was in Indiana at a campground on the Midwest Pagan Council, which was primarily composed of Chicago area Wiccan and other pagan groups, was putting this on. We were among the first to arrive at the 1977 Pan Pagan Festival, and we were there to share our music and to do some workshops. Well, during that particular festival, not everybody in the campground was thrilled that there were pagans in ritual robes dancing around a bonfire. And actually, during the main ritual, some non-pagans from another part of the campground came storming up to where we were as a group, and they were quite intimidated by this presence of people doing ritual at this campground. I remember catching wind of the fact that some people were making their way up to us, and it was bad enough that they had fear and anger present, but some of them had been drinking, so that tended to amplify that. And so our ritual, which was about over, did stop at that point. Some pagans got pretty concerned and actually ran off in the woods and hid in the bushes. I had a sense that I might help be part of a diffusing of the situation and ended up going to the ringleader, who was holding some chains in his hand and a wooden cross, and went up to him and said, "Can I help you?" And that so totally surprised him that I was being mannerly and kind to him and asking if he wanted some help, that actually it helped de-escalate the situation. Some other people were also starting to connect with the non-pagans that had come to defend their families against these witches in the woods. And actually, after 20, 30 minutes of face-to-face dialogue, things really calmed down. And in fact, we invited them to all sit around the campfire with us. And one of the people who is at the festival told ghost stories, and they had a great time with us. Well, as a result of doing this intervention, the Midwest Pagan Council asked me and Jim Allen to become part of the Midwest Pagan Council and to have Circle, to represent Circle Sanctuary. So we agreed to do that, and indeed, for the next few years, we helped put on that event. But we also were putting on our own events, including some camping events, at our headquarters near Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. And the festival movement started gaining momentum in the mid to late 70s. These were events that brought together people from many different paths, and given the fact that Circle Network was thriving and growing rapidly, we had a means to let people know about these campouts that were being held by the Midwest Pagan Council, as well as the events that we were doing. In 1978, it seemed to me we really needed to take the steps to get legally recognized, legally established as a church. So in 1978, myself, Jim Allen, and several other people formed the Church of Circle Wicca. We still went by the name Circle, but we decided to put church in our name since there really weren't much in the way of pagan, Wiccan, Druid, or other churches in the U.S. or other parts of the world. So we filed incorporated paperwork with the state of Wisconsin. We had a board of directors. We had a system for ordaining ministers. And we had a group of individuals as well as subgroups, covens, that had formed on their own and then saw us as a place where we would have a church structure and they could be part of. So Church of Circle Wicca was born, and we continued to hold our main ceremonies for celebrating the seasons and the moons at our Sun Prairie place. We decided that we needed to record our music, not just have it in songbook form, and so our first album, Circle Magic Music, and you heard the Watchers chant from that, came into being. We used the brand new technology of cassette tape at the time and didn't actually go into a recording studio. We found a way to make this happen and get some special effects by going to an apartment and getting a set of recording microphones and a reel-to-reel tape player and recorder. And so we created our own kind of recording studio for our very first album. And then over the years, we, as technology has improved, we've upgraded and remastered our first album. It was the first cassette tape album of Wiccan and pagan ritual music to get widely circulated within pagan culture, and it encouraged other Wiccan and pagan musicians to not only share their ritual music at the growing festivals that were part of the festival movement, but to actually record them using cassette tape technology to do so. 1978 was another important year for us for another reason. We expanded from radio broadcasting into television broadcasting, and we did our Circle Magic show, and after doing the radio show, we went across town to a brand new station, Cable 4, now known as WYOU, and we did an hour-long show on Community Access Cable Channel. We, again, worked with a wide variety of themes, not only having some shows specifically about paganism and the Wiccan religion, but we talked about inner development and wellness and parapsychology. Indeed, sometimes we would take a person who was interviewed on our radio show with us as we went across town and then would do a face-to-face interview for an hour on television. Well, in 1979, the network had continued to grow. Circle Network was continuing to gain momentum, and it became apparent to me that we really needed to do a source book and to give people that were willing to be able to be visible, to have their names, the names of their group, their addresses, and other information made public to be part of our source book. This book the Circle Guide to Wicca and Pagan Resources met with wonderful response, and it continued to be an aid for networking and community building within various geographical communities, as well as across the U.S. and other parts of the world. Circle Network was growing worldwide at this point. Our media work started becoming national and international. And for the first time, the religion section of a major American news magazine, Time Magazine, decided to cover paganism. How did this come about? Well, Pan Pagan Festival 1979 had an inquiry from some media people who really wanted to come and see what we were about. Now, as a group, as a council, we were supposedly needing to come to consensus or at least have majority vote about interface with media or other outside forces. Well, what is set down as protocol doesn't always get followed, and some people who are part of the council thought it would be a grand idea, once time made contact, to say, yeah, come on down to our pagan festival. I was in charge of publicity and had been spending several years encouraging individuals and groups of pagans to get out from the underground and at least come to some gatherings to connect with others. And I saw this as a really positive thing. But I also recognize that being visible about one's orientation with other pagans was a stretch for some people, but some people were willing to do it. Being visible with national media was something very few people wanted to do. I didn't seek out national media, but as a result of things that unfolded at Pan Pagan Festival 1979, I ended up having the opportunity to deal with it. Indeed, I had no idea that Time Magazine was going to be showing up to the gathering until the start of the gathering, when I was informed by the people on the council who thought it was a great idea and made the decision themselves to let Time Magazine come. Well, I was not thrilled about this, but also felt, well, they're coming, so I might as well quickly connect with the various groups there, let the people who were at the festival know that a reporter and a photographer were showing up, and let people make choice as to whether they wanted to be interviewed, whether they wanted to have any contact with the press at all. And I thought that it was important to serve as the press liaison, so I made a point of taking the press around to the places where people were camped who were okay with talking with the press, and basically having them not go to the places where people wanted to maintain their privacy. And this, for the most part, seemed to be working okay. We did have a variety of different rituals and workshops that happened, and some of them were open to the press. And one of the ceremonies that I did was a wedding. And Jim Allen and I were doing a pagan hand fasting. And the couple was totally fine with us doing this hand fasting and having the media there. And indeed, as the article got written, the irony is, for myself, who really wasn't even wanting the media there, it turned out the people that they photographed and reported on were all people connected with Circle Sanctuary, and we were the ones that didn't even want the publicity. And so Time Magazine came out, and the article helped build some awareness of the growing pagan movement. The good thing about it is there were some opportunities to do more public education about it, and wonderful things came to be. We met some people from the international press. There were people from Germany and Brazil and other parts of the world that were calling up, getting interviews. We did radio. We did TV. And for us who hadn't really wanted Time even there in the first place, given the fact that things unfolded for us to get featured and therefore get bombarded by press interviews, we took it as a sign from the gods and goddesses, from the divine, the ancient ones, that we really should do this work. So we sought to do this work. We found ourselves in People magazine. We found ourselves on national television shows, on public radio, and a variety of other media. There is even a PBS documentary we were part of. The good thing is more people who were pagan realized that there was an emerging pagan movement. That was a positive thing. A challenging thing was that our landlord and landlady, they didn't really see any of this publicity. They just heard from neighbors about witches in the media. And shortly after Samhain in 1979, we had the sheriff come knocking at our door, serving us eviction papers. We had 1 month to find another place to live. So Circle Farm number one was a good home for a time, but that publicity ended up activating prejudice that led to us having to relocate. We decided not to try to fight the eviction. Indeed, we didn't have an actual lease. It was old rural gentle person's agreement. It was a verbal agreement. And we took it as a sign that we needed to move. At that point, we had Jim Allen and myself, Deanna Alba, and Lou Shen, all living as part of a community at our Circle Farm number one. We had a lot of creatures. Deanna had a horse. Jim had all sorts of reptiles and rodents. I had cats, and Jim had a dog. So we had quite a menagerie. So as winter was coming on, trying to find another location that would let us have all those creatures was a bit of a challenge. We did find a mansion that was up for rent on a month-to-month lease near Ashton, Wisconsin, and we moved there. I did feel it was important to have some direct dialogue with landlord and landlady who had issued the eviction decision. And we actually did go and see them and talk with them to try to clear up their misconceptions about who we were. We weren't trying to change their minds about evicting us, but we really felt that we couldn't just leave without trying to address the misinformation. We had talked about having land eventually for our headquarters. We had done some preliminary discussions about this. Indeed, part of moving to Circle Farm number one and renting a rural place was to try out rural living in a community to learn what that was about, to develop our center, and to gain knowledge and experience. And then if it worked out, we planned to get land of our own in 10 to 15 years. Well, what was supposed to be a 10 to 15 year plan turned out to happen much sooner. So we started raising funds for a permanent home for us. So this created excitement within the larger pagan community. Some of that excitement was very supportive. We did get all sorts of donations starting to come in. Some of the excitement was of concerns, and some of the voices that were raised, my goodness, we can't have a pagan institution. Pagans shouldn't own land. And while that may seem really strange now, given the fact that there are pagan land projects throughout the United States and other parts of the world, back then this innovation was considered quite radical. Indeed, paganism emerging not only from people that were seeking to live in harmony with nature and the burgeoning interest in consciousness studies, but there were some counterculture roots of contemporary paganism as it rebirthed itself in the 1960s and 70s. And we continued with our plans to raise funds for what is now known as Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve. Well, 1980, we decided it was time to apply for federal recognition as a Wiccan pagan church. And we received our federal recognition, and we started doing more networking as a result. I will continue our story as we do part two in our next series of Divining Dreams. I thank you all for listening, and we close tonight's story of Circle Sanctuary with a song known as Magic Song.